Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here on the 5571 podcast. My name is Danny, and for those that don't know, this is a podcast all about what's new and what's happening at the Design Resort, as well as other Southern California theme parks like Knott's Berry Farm, Universal Studios, and of course, Disney parks. We're talking about D23 Expo sometimes as well. And we're going to be talking a lot more about that, not only on this episode, but also coming up, right? Because we have some important dates on the horizon this coming month for tickets to this year's event. So I want to go ahead and kick off this episode, get into the Disneyland news, and then onto our main topic, talking a little bit more about what we know so far about D23, the ultimate Disney fan event. So for our Disneyland news, I wanted to start off talking about one of our upcoming nights, Disney Channel Night, which I'll be going to on that first night next week, and I'll be talking about it on the podcast, so something we can share on what's going to be happening. So for those of you that are going, you'll be able to know what to expect, at least for the second night anyway. But what we got so far before the event leading up to it now, Disney shared what characters were going to be there, right? Because with a label like Disney Channel Night, it kind of could have been a lot of different things. They could have gone live action wise and done like their own versions of the characters from High School Musical or their own version of characters from Camp Rock, Descendants, stuff like that. So we didn't really kind of know. And now we actually have the character list posted and available on the event guide. Disney shared it. Maybe possibly to kind of help sell a little bit more tickets for that final day. But essentially, if you had ever gone to the Disney Channel night for Disney's 90s night, which was arguably the best After Dark night that Disneyland's ever done, the 90s character list is pretty much what we're getting for Disney Channel night. So they're going childhood nostalgia retro for character experiences. So they're going old style Disney Channel night. So for those of you that really liked 90s night, well, this coming Disney Channel night could be a little bit of a mix of all that childhood nostalgia. So we're having characters such as Kim Possible, which will be a live action character. And we've had her before in the past. They're going to have Baloo, King Louie, and Don Carnage from Tailspin. Then they're going to have Lilo, Stitch, and Experiments, of course, from the Lilo and Stitch show and, of course, the Lilo and Stitch movie. But there was a Disney Channel show, so that's relevant. Then we're going to have Chip, Dale, and Monterey Jack. And since Monterey Jack's there, I'm imagining that Chip and Dale will probably be in their Rescue Ranger outfits, which is even more 90s themed. And all these characters were at 90s night as well, too. Darkwing Duck and Launchpad McQuack, also from the Darkwing Duck show. Then we're going to have Goofy and Max. I'll throw back to the Goofy movie, right? Which had quite a mainstay on the Disney Channel, so that's also relevant. Don't know if Goofy's going to be maybe in like a fishing outfit or if they're just going to be in their regular costumes. We'll have to wait and see with that one. Then we have Rapunzel and Flynn Rider, also relevant because they had a Tangled television show on Disney Channel. So, a little, maybe more so for current day kids rather than like millennial, 90s kids that were having some of these nostalgic character experiences. And then Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Scrooge McDuck, of course, from DuckTales, which is relevant to not only the older generation, but the newer generation with the new version of DuckTales. And then, of course, you can't have an After Dark event without Mickey and Minnie. And who knows what their costumes are going to be like. But I would imagine they'll have some sort of fun kind of streetwear costume. And honestly, this character list was just, I was just like, man, this is where we're going. This night's going to be childhood nostalgia. So I'm just imagining some really great Disney Channel hit songs playing all over the park. These awesome character meet and greet experiences. Hopefully they have some really cool backdrops for photos like from Xenon and other Disney Channel original movies. You know for sure, just as well as I do, that they're going to have a photo op of, like some sort of TV or something where the Disney Channel like glow icon is in front of you and then you stand behind it holding like a rod that looks like, what the Disney Channel stars used to do when they would draw the shape of Mickey Mouse and it would do that glowing thing. I can already guarantee you that's going to be a photo op, so we can just expect that. But they've made a few other announcement details. They flesh out more details too about the entertainment. So we kind of got a little bit more about that. And then the website showed a picture of what looked like a kebab that was like s'mores, that had like s'more stuff all over the kebab. But when you click the food, like the food offerings, it didn't like list specifically like some of the snacks and stuff you might find, but it did showcase the different menus that they were going to be having for like dining packages that were happening not only at Riverbell Terrace, but also at Cafe Orleans. And they're real kind of like 90s throwbacks with like pizza on French bread. And they had the Monte Cristo sandwich at Cafe Orleans, but it's got a twist to it and it's a PB&J. So there's a bunch of different fun options. Those are all on the After Dark event website. You can see like the whole menu of what they're going to be offering. And honestly, the pricing for the dining packages at these two restaurants is actually pretty good. It's not that bad. It was like in the 30s for some of these. But the only issue with that is that with the being that the experience only being 4 hours for these After Dark parties, 4 or 5 hours, do you really want to spend like some of your time sitting down at a table service restaurant when you could be meeting these awesome, cool character experiences or experiencing rides with very, very minimal wait times or doing some photo opportunities as well? So I just don't know that I'd want to dedicate that much time. I always tell people in general for all the After Dark events, it's my personal opinion that you should dine before you come into the event. Grab some dinner either in Downtown Disney or even before you get to the resort. Have your main meal somewhere else and just use the event to do some snacks. And if you wanted to get like an entree item from one of the restaurants because it just looks super cool on the guide, maybe use that as your snack and like share it amongst all of you. So that's kind of what I tell people. Use the event to get some snacks, maybe, if you want to get some of the fun food offerings that they're not offering on a normal day. And then use your time to kind of go on attractions and see these character experiences and photo ops. I can tell you right now, a lot of these characters are going to have huge waits. So I'm definitely not going to be able to see them all, but I'll try to pick a few that I want to do. But I also want to showcase what it's like to try to ride attractions during an event like this, where the, you know, the crowds that are in Disneyland for this party are much less than what you'd find at a normal day at Disneyland. So I want to showcase that as well too, and just showcase the vibe. So we'll be doing all of that. That'll be going on the YouTube channel, of course. But I'll probably talk about it first here on the podcast, because editing a YouTube video takes a lot longer, and I probably definitely won't be getting it out before the second night happens. But the podcast episode will definitely try to get out before that second night, so that people who are going can listen to it and prepare accordingly. But I'm excited. It's a brand new After Dark event, something that we haven't had before. Last year, that was all about Pride Night, seeing what they were going to do for that. And that turned out to be really, really fun with all the people sharing their experiences with that. So this will be different. Some people were really liking the idea of this. Some people were poo-pooing the idea. I was on board right away because I just know that Disney does these like nostalgia events really well, having done 80s night, 90s night, and just knowing that both of those have been such great hits. And the real kind of, I had a hint or an inkling that the real kind of juice behind this event was going to be nostalgia and like 90s and 2000s Disney Channel, because of like, you know, High School Musical and Camp Rock and stuff like that. But people saw Camp Rock, Descendants, and High School Musical and just immediately assumed, oh, it's not for my generation, that came after me. And while you could maybe have enjoyed those, you know, going into like after your teens, you know, and so on, there was just nostalgia around those in general. But I feel like maybe Disney should have also led with these characters, because if they led with these characters, it kind of would have pulled both. And that was what I was originally saying when I proposed like more of a nostalgia night for one of these After Dark events. I wanted Disney to call it like the decades night, where it had 80s, 90s, and 2000s. So it kind of appealed to not only like the older generation, but and the millennials, to, more of the Gen Z kids when they were, in elementary school and maybe junior high with things like Descendants and like Camp Rock, maybe Camp Rock's a little bit before them, but either way, it would have, I feel like it would have been a great way to do that. And I feel like showcasing these characters a lot earlier on when people were buying tickets and the original hype came out for this event, that would have been the move, because with these characters only just coming out now, I think a lot of people already made their mind up that, oh, this is a Disney Channel night focused on an era of Disney Channel that wasn't for me. And I feel like that kind of turned a lot of people off. I know immediately Mondo, from Five Fires YouTube, he was just like, oh, I don't care about any of these because I never watched Descendants. I wasn't a big fan of High School Musical, and I don't even know what Camp Rock is. You know, that's what Mondo said. And then, but seeing these other characters like Kim Possible, Lilo and Stitch, Darkwing Duck, you know, knowing they're going to have Tailspin and DuckTales, Goofy movie characters, and, you know, Darkwing Duck, like those are all more our childhood experiences. So I feel like maybe that might have changed people's opinions. And at this point, unless they're seeking that out, they're not going to probably see this. And so I feel like that's kind of a bummer. But either way, I wanted to share it with you since that's the details that we have. Of course, I'm sure after I post this podcast episode, we'll get a lot more details because we're going to be getting closer to the event. So we're going to probably see things like menu items pop up in the app and things that we could share, of course, after I experience them next week, after we post next week's episode. But keep an eye out, of course, always on my Twitter. I try to post things as they come there. In addition to that, make sure you're following Disney Parks on Twitter. And also just following Disney Parks blog in general, because whenever they're posting big news announcements, it's always from Disney Channel or Disney Parks blog. So it's typically where people get their information and then they share it out themselves on Twitter. So something to keep in mind, but I'm excited for this event. I hope a lot of people who are going are excited about it too, after seeing all these character experiences. I was incorrect when we were originally talking about this, that the Descendants River Cruise is not on the Mark Twain like the 90s R&B River Cruise was for the 90s night. It's actually going to be on the pirate ship, which someone told me on the live stream makes a lot more sense because one of the characters from Descendants is a pirate. So it makes sense for them to be on a pirate ship. So it's going to be a cruise still, but it's going to be on the sailing ship Columbia, which is a little more in theme for that movie, I guess. So either way, I'm still planning on doing that. That's on the agenda that evening. So we're going to have to wait and do that one, line up for that one. I know that those river cruises don't go like all night, so I'll have to make sure I time that correctly. Next up, really quickly, I wanted to discuss attraction closures and reopenings. So we've been talking a lot about the Mark Twain and the saga of that and how it's constantly been changing what its refurbished opening date was going to be. I went this last weekend to film a video for YouTube as well as just see if I could get on the Mark Twain finally, since it was scheduled to be back, but it again had been pushed back even further. So when I was there on Sunday, the cast member there told me that the Mark Twain was not sailing, and that it was pushed back a few days, and each day they kept pushing it back a day and then pushing it back a day. But he had told me that they would be hopefully planning to open it on Monday or Tuesday after Sunday of last week. And of course, we're filming or recording this podcast on Wednesday night, and the Mark Twain has already reopened as of yesterday. So it was closed all day Sunday and all day Monday, but when I went to go check it out on Sunday, it was no longer on dry dock. It was fully flooded and just floating on the water per usual. There was no plastic wrap or scaffolding around it anymore. There was just the fence up around it. But the ship looked ready to go, and it was ready to like test. At least it looked that way anyway. So that was a good sign that hopefully it wasn't going to be extended super long. I mean, the last time we saw it, it had like plastic wrap all over it. They were still painting or doing some wood treatment on some of the things on the interior. It was on dry dock. So the possibility of it opening anytime soon just didn't look the same. But now it looked a lot different. Then, of course, a couple of days later, it did reopen. So I didn't have a successful attempt at riding it this last weekend, but I am headed back to the resort this weekend. I don't necessarily know that the Mark Twain, I can't think off the top of my head if it runs during the rain or not. I think it does run during the rain, but that they don't let guests on the third floor. And they can only go on like the bottom and the second floors in the rain, just because like the wood can get slick. So they don't want to have guests kind of slipping all over the place on that upper deck. I think that's the case if I remember correctly, but I am headed to the resort this weekend on Saturday. I wanted to experience my first day for Food and Wine Festival, which we're going to talk about next, since that starts this weekend, but it's actually forecasted to rain in a pretty high percentage too. So a little bit of a bummer there, but, we'll try and experience Mark Twain anyways. Who knows? I could change my mind depending on how bad the weather's looking and try to go Sunday again, and see if, cause right now as it stands, Sunday isn't forecasted for rain. So maybe it's a better move to do Food and Wine on Sunday, instead of that Saturday, but for right now, plan is to go on Saturday. But either way, I'm going to attempt to do Mark Twain again this weekend so I can bring that to you guys and showcase that once again. But on the topic of Disneyland closures, I wanted to showcase some other reopening dates that we got. So we talked about Astro Orbiter and how that was getting a full redo and full everything. Well, when I was there over the weekend, it was also getting put back together pretty much all the way. It was way more advanced than when I saw it the previous week, so they had really done a lot of work here. This attraction went down in November of 2023, so just before the new year, and it was closed indefinitely as far as the calendar was concerned, because we still didn't have a reopening date for it, because the calendar only goes out so far. So, but now, just as of a couple weeks ago, or just last week actually, the Astro Orbiter has a reopening date of March 22nd. So we're about a month away, a little less than a month away of the attraction opening. And it definitely looked that way when I saw it last weekend. So that was basically pretty much already built, with the exception of the rockets being installed. And then they still had some painting left to do on like the exterior planetary kind of decorative items that go along the outside of the attraction. And then of course, Haunted Mansion, no reopening date yet, still unknown. And then over at Disney California Adventure Park, this weekend is going to mark the reopening of Grizzly River Run. So it's going to reopen on the 1st, which is Friday. So the first day of Food and Wine Festival will mark the reopening of Grizzly River Run, Food and Wine Festival, and the return of Soarin' Over California. So Soarin' Around the World will take a little bit of a hiatus, and per usual with the festival schedule nowadays, Soarin' Over California returns to Soarin' during the festival event. So during this whole Food and Wine Festival, if you like the OG Soarin' Over California, make sure you hit up Soarin', get that lightning lane for it, whatever you want to do, because that'll be back also starting on Friday. And then over at Disney California Adventure Park, the last kind of closure to mention is for Radiator Springs Racers. So right now it is closed, but it's going to be reopening this weekend. Unfortunately, it's reopening on Saturday, which is the forecasted day of rain. And if you ever know anything about Radiator Springs Racers, this attraction doesn't really operate in the rain. So depending on when it rains in the day, it will probably open or delay its opening for the rain. So keep that in mind if you are going this weekend and wanted to ride Radiator Springs Racers since you saw it returning on the calendar. If it is raining, it's typically a no-go for Radiator Springs Racers. It's just not an attraction that operates safely in the rain, so they don't typically do it. It's usually like shut down during that until they can get the tracks dry and everything, and then they'll reopen it again. So it definitely does reopen on rainy days, so it's not like an end-all be-all if it does happen, but something to keep in mind if it was on your agenda or plans for the weekend. And like I teased earlier, I wanted to talk next about the Food and Wine Festival that's kicking off this weekend, March 1st, on Friday, over at Disney California Adventure Park, and it's going all the way through April 22nd, which is basically just a few days until it leads us into the Pixar Fest. But Food and Wine, like I mentioned, starts this weekend. I was there last weekend kind of trying to see what the setup was looking like since we were in that weird transition phase from going from Lunar New Year into the Food and Wine Festival. It seems like most of the beverage and education tasting seminars have booked up so far, so you can keep checking it. They make a little bit more of availability on the website if you still wanted to book one of those. But I also wanted to bring up the fact that Food and Wine Festival had less booths this year. I noticed it when I was there over the weekend, seeing kind of where the booth placement was. I saw the booths where we normally see them, but in different locations. So we're seeing like relocated areas for booths we would normally see in like the performance corridor, now showing up over by Grizzly River Run. I didn't even actually have a chance to check Hollywoodland to see what booths ended up over there. I know Disney Scoop Guy on Twitter, he posted that he noticed that they still hadn't put up the Avocado Time booth yet or the Artichoke booth. I think it's like I Heart Artichokes or something like that. So those booths were missing. And I can't remember on the foodie guide if they were included. There was quite a bit of new food items, but that is a shame if we've lost a few of the booths, because that means that the other booths are going to have to absorb those queues, right? If we think about one of the nice things about the Food and Wine Festival typically is with so many booths, it definitely had an easier time as far as wait times were concerned, compared to Lunar New Year Festival. Lunar New Year Festival having less booths, it always felt like the lines for that were so much longer because like the big hitters were always at like the same booth, and typically it was like the noodle booth or something like that, and it had such a long, long wait. But, you know, with the Food and Wine Festival, we had so many booths for that. We had so many booths for the Festival of the Holidays. It felt like it did a better job of kind of distributing some of those queues and some of the options around it. But if we have two booths missing altogether, that could be a little bit of a negative impact. They are doing, like I mentioned the last time, a really cool new Sip and Saver Pass, which they're offering 4 tickets or 8 tickets. So you don't have to pick the 8 like you usually do. If you want to do less, you can do 4 this time. So it's something, a really cool change that I'm happy they brought around for this time. But either way, there was like, I think, 88 new items. So even with the less amount of booths, they still had a lot of new items to try. I did walk over to the Paradise Garden Grill to see if they had the new menu up yet, so they could see some pictures of kind of some of the things, because they always have really cool pictures on their menu to accompany what you're looking at. But they didn't have the new menu up just yet. So obviously we have the foodie guide, so we know what's coming over there, but I didn't have a chance to see the pictures of it all. So I was hoping to show you guys that, but it didn't work out that way. They still had you could tell they had just pulled off the Lunar New Year one, because it had the old menu underneath it and like the stickiness pads that like held on the other one. So but either way, we'll be there this weekend. We can talk about it, talk about my favorites. Of course, you already know from the last time, the Cheeseburger Pod, aka the Cheeseburger Bao Bun, is one of my top ones. Then definitely the Pizza Wings. I think I want that pizza from Boardwalk Pizza and Pasta. There was also like a beef stroganoff one that looked pretty good. So there was a lot of really fun options and some churros too that sounded interesting. So we'll have to see. There's definitely a lot on the list. I'm really hoping to go on not a rainy day, because it makes eating and showcasing some of these things, especially with food being delivered to you in like cardboard boats, very difficult in the rain. Trying to find a space that's not exposed to the elements when you're trying to enjoy the food. So that's the hard part. But either way, it's going to be a fun time. I hope everyone listening gets a chance to visit and go to Food and Wine too. It's one of the best events over at the Disneyland Resort just in general, and a really fun time to visit Disney California Adventure Park. Even though it can feel really crowded, there's a lot of ways to kind of have a great experience during Food and Wine and get the most out of it. And I think it's really fun and awesome to be there during these times, because there's so many options as far as food is concerned. When you're visiting things like Disneyland Park, there's not always like a huge variety of like places to eat and fun things to kind of try, as far as like different types of quick service and stuff like that. So with DCA already having a superior food menu for the most part, most of the time, adding these options on through Food and Wine just really makes a day trip to Disney California Adventure that much more fun, as far as trying and doing things that aren't just riding rides. So it's a lot of fun, and I hope everyone gets to experience it. And if you wanted to book one of those beverage education and tasting seminars, that you could do those too, because it's only $25. It's money well spent for a fun kind of little excursion in the day and something different you don't normally get to do at Disneyland. And lastly, for our Main Street topic, I wanted to get into a little bit about D23, right? We talked about earlier in this year when D23 finally shared not only the dates of the event, but also when tickets would go on sale and a few more details. Now, they gave and shared a big detail, which was that the Anaheim Convention Center wasn't going to be the only place that was going to be housing the D23 event this year. It was going to be extending its essentially show times and show areas over to the Honda Center. Now, the Honda Center is also in the Anaheim Resort area, but it's not close, not even slightly. It's essentially, if you decided to walk it, according to Apple Maps, when you put it in from the Anaheim Convention Center to the Honda Center, that's an hour walk. So it's a very long walk from one to the other, even though it's a straight line down Catella. It's a very, very long walk. You're walking underneath the 5 freeway and continuing on into the city of Anaheim. So it's not exactly close. However, the nice part is it gives folks a little bit of variety when it comes to choosing where they want to stay if they're traveling and visiting Anaheim for D23. So the bulk of the event is going to take place at the Anaheim Convention Center, right? And again, for those that didn't know, D23 is taking place on August 9th, 10th, and 11th. So 9th through 11th. For the event dates. So keep that in mind, put that on your calendar. I'm really excited that it went back to August this year. Not a fan when it was in September, a little too close to Halloween stuff, and it just makes everything super chaotic. So this is going to be in August now. Although Disney's Halloween season starts in August, it's not starting till the end of August. So this week is like a whole few weeks before that's even happening. Even though the main event is taking place at the Anaheim Convention Center, they're going to be using the Honda Center in the evening. So Disney shared that the fun is going to extend in the evening at the Honda Center to the bigger marquee shows. So if you think at the current D23 Expo in the past, they used Hall D23, which was essentially Hall's D and part of E, I think. They combined them and then just put chairs out to make an arena, essentially, or a big stage that would accommodate about 7,500 people, I believe it was, or just over 7,000 people, which doubled, really, the space that they had in the arena, which, if you've ever seen the Anaheim Convention Center, is the big dome. The big dome was where the big events at D23 Expo used to be held when it first opened in 2019 or 2009, 2011. I think 2013 was the first year they transitioned to Hall D23. I think the first 2 years they did inside the arena. It was fun in the arena. It felt big. It felt almost sometimes bigger than Hall D23, even though Hall D23 doubled their space as far as capacity. The problem with it is they sold more tickets to D23 Expo than enough people could fit, even in Hall D23 with like 7,000 people. So the goal to Honda Center, from what I've heard, or just in general, seeing the capacity when you look at it, right? The Honda Center's total capacity, I think, is just over 18,000 people. But then you have to consider that Honda Center is a round arena, right? It's meant for sporting events like hockey, which is its mainstay. You know, it's the home to the Ducks. So if they're going to be putting a stage on there to be performing or showcasing something, their marquee shows, you're going to ultimately cut out a large section of seating because those seats are going to be directly behind the stage. So there'll be a large section cut out. So let's just say they cut out like 3,000 or 4,000 seats. That still leaves them with like 14,000 or 15,000 seats, which essentially, again, doubles the amount of space that they have over at the Hall D23. So even though logistics are a little weird and at this point unknown, as to kind of how you can get there. My guess is they're going to have shuttles, but they did say into the evening at the Honda Center. So I feel like they're going to give us a little bit of time from when D23 Expo ends, at least on the show floor and the other presentations, until the marquee show starts over at the Honda Center. So it gives people time to maybe go back to their hotels, figure out transportation to the Honda Center, etc. So, and potentially for those brave souls that want to walk, gives them that time to kind of meander on over there. Now, as far as going back to giving you variety, there's a lot of hotels around this area too, and they're typically a lot cheaper because they're farther removed from the resort itself. They're not that close to the convention center, so you're going to find things like the Aries Hotel and other things that are a little bit on the more affordable side. And additionally, for those that are traveling from, you know, other cities, if you're coming from the LA area or down south in San Diego and you didn't want to consider driving, the nice part is that the Anaheim Honda Center, excuse me, is literally directly across the street from the Anaheim Regional Transportation Center, which is the train station, the big, beautiful train station, actually, in Anaheim. It's probably one of the nicest train stations in Southern California, in my opinion. And this is the train station that services Anaheim. So it's right there across from Angel Stadium, directly across from the Honda Center. So you can take the train right up to Anaheim from San Diego, down from LA, and you're directly across from a major venue for D23, and you can get a hotel right there and really never have to drive anywhere or get transportation anywhere other than the convention center. And you can probably use things like the Anaheim Resort Transit, the ART, if you're trying to get to and from the convention center space, and also your hotel, that if you're getting a hotel that's near the train station, it's a little bit easier to use Anaheim's transportation because you can use the train station as your destination. So there's a lot of different buses and transportation kind of shuttles that go to and from the Anaheim train station there. So if your hotel is around those spaces, you can essentially use that as your destination and then just walk to your hotel. So it is nice for those that kind of want to come to this event and don't want to have a car. They don't want to worry about paying for parking at the Anaheim Convention Center or even dealing with that. If you've ever been during D23, that whole parking situation at Anaheim Convention Center is crazy. However, this is could be really, really fun and could be exciting with it being at the Honda Center. So again, think about the logistics going from about 7,500, 7,000 people to doubling it again around maybe 14,000-15,000 if they're cutting out about 3,000 or 4,000 seats. That could, again, double the space and potentially maybe even give everyone a space to see one of these shows if they wanted to, which would be very different from years past, right? It was extremely hard and very laborious to get into any of these huge presentations that Disney was showcasing in Hall D23. It usually meant either some complicated lottery system that not everyone even knew you had to do, which meant when you got to the event and you're like, oh, I want to do this, and then find out that you didn't get to participate in the lottery, so you don't have a chance to go to it. Or it meant you can join a standby line that started to queue up the night before, even though they're not supposed to, people did it anyway. So it just kind of was a lot of chaos and really difficult for the average guest to navigate, and really turned off a lot of people to D23 in the past. I've been going to every single D23 event since it began in 2009, and I've constantly heard this feedback from people that go, whether they've gone with me or whether they've gone and posted comments about some of the content that I showcased and shared, not only in preparation leading up to the event, but some of my, you know, recaps from the days that I went. So it was always like, this was too overwhelming, it was too difficult to get into any of the presentations, or I bought a ticket and couldn't even get into any of the experiences, so what was the point of the ticket? So if you think about doubling their space yet again and equally giving everyone the opportunity to go to one of these big panels for Marvel, for Star Wars, or Disney parks, that would truly be the great move. Even if it meant logistics were a little bit more difficult and you had to find your way to the Honda Center, it might be the move as far as essentially the having access to the marquee show where everyone gets a chance to experience it. And they don't have to worry about queuing up the day before or waiting 5 hours on cement in a line, right? They could show up to the venue the night of and know, hey, I'll still get a seat in there, even if it's in the nosebleeds. I'm just happy to be in there and be a part of it all. So that's the fun part. The only thing that kind of worries me a little bit is just logistics. Parking isn't the best at Honda Center. It can get kind of chaotic. They can overflow into the Angel Stadium and use some of their parking as well too, and kind of have guests come over that direction. There's a lot of different options, but it gets chaotic here. And I feel like everyone leaving at the same time after the event gets out, trying to get back to their hotels, trying to just leave and go home if they're not staying for the event, could get a little crazy. I don't know what Disney's shuttle situation is going to be looking like. Maybe we see kind of what they implement over in San Diego Comic-Con with those people that use those little like bicycle carriages. I forget what those are called, but Disney actually had worked with San Diego Comic-Con to theme the ones this last San Diego Comic-Con to the buggies from Haunted Mansion to advertise the movie at the time. So maybe we get something like that leading you back and forward that you could pay to utilize if you wanted to. Something to think of. But I kind of like the idea of the convention center being the home of the main event throughout the whole day. And not having to worry about this gigantic Hall D23 with 7,000 people unloading this mass crowd into the show floor twice a day. It would get really crazy, a little exhausting when that would happen, because if you weren't going to those events because you didn't want to wait all night long or you didn't successfully get into the lottery, you would be on the show floor wanting to experience, let's say, the gift shop for Mickey's of Glendale, or you wanted to queue up to get into a different exhibit or go shop at one of the other, the Disney Dream Store where it had all the merchandise for the event. But then all of a sudden, one of these big Hall D23 presentations would let out, and there's 7,500 people trying to figure out what they're going to do. And instantly, the Mickey's of Glendale line went from 1 hour to 3 hours. And that happened so many times at D23, it made it really difficult for the average guest to kind of navigate that if they weren't really expecting this to go on. And it made the event feel a lot more crowded than it was. So I feel like letting people come and go and experience the show for what it is, with smaller presentations, some bigger ones too, in different convention spaces that they've converted into different presentation rooms. And then, of course, the big show floor and the exhibition halls and all that stuff. Let them do that as they'd like. Then the event ends or concludes, and if you wish to make your way to the Honda Center for these big presentations, you can. And I'm hoping, this is what I'm hoping, I don't know if they're going to do this, but in some of the D23 events in years past, they tried to satiate some of the guests that couldn't get the lottery or couldn't get into these big panels by doing on-site live streams. So they would have essentially the big arena, the big dome, full of fans that couldn't get into Hall D23 for the presentation. And they would live stream it directly to a big screen inside the arena. And you could sit down and watch it in there live with everyone else. So you still get that fun audience reaction of everyone around you. You're still experiencing it in the moment before everyone else. But maybe that's a really good option for guests that don't want to travel all the way to the Honda Center, or maybe don't have the means to do that. So that's something I'm hoping. They haven't shared that they're doing that, but I really do hope that there's some sort of live stream option other than just telling you to live stream it yourself from like your phone or something like that. I hope there's like a way for guests who don't want to leave the property to be able to watch it on some sort of screen in an auditorium that can accommodate a few people if they didn't want to hoof it all the way to the Honda Center. But I kind of wanted to mention that again because a lot of people were like, well, when is it going to be? Is it going to be at the beginning of the day? Is it going to be later on? And we already knew Disney said it was going to be extending into the evening. So we know that's what it's going to be. It's the nighttime aspect of it all. And again, we know that tickets are going on sale at the end of March. And I think actually it's on the website now. Tickets go on sale March 26th. So that is literally about a month away as of recording this podcast. So make sure you're budgeting for that. You're planning accordingly as far as trying to be ready to queue up in a digital queue or whatever it is you need to do on that day. But March 26th will be the day when we can purchase all those tickets. And then we'll truly find out probably a little bit closer to the event is my guess what the logistics really look like. Is this Honda Center section going to be a separate ticket? Is it going to be included and they're just moving to a bigger venue to allow everyone to have the access to it? That's the big question. And once I get that information, we'll definitely share it out on the podcast and continue to talk a lot more about D23 because people have so many questions about it. A lot of people going for their first time, right? And this event seems so much more different, not only for the fact that Honda Center is included, but it seems more grandiose in the sense that they've dropped the expo name off of the event. It's now called D23, the Ultimate Disney Fan Event. It's poised to be, or it's definitely looking like it's being presented or polished to be some bigger event than what it normally is. So that's kind of the exciting thing. So I'm hoping as we get into the month of March, we're going to get a lot more details about what we can expect from D23 leading up to ticket sales. So we'll have to wait and see. And that wraps up this episode of the 5571 podcast. I want to thank you all for taking time to listen to this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. I want to also thank those that are subscribed or following the podcast on whatever platform they're on. Make sure you're doing that if you're not already so you get notified about those future episodes coming out each week when we're talking about all the news and things that are happening, especially with all the things on horizon. There's going to be lots of things to talk about. So, and again, I love seeing all the messages people send too. So thanks for sending those DM questions, writing those reviews on iTunes or Spotify. I really do appreciate them. I've seen them. And I want to thank you guys for taking the time to do that. I love that people love listening to it each week. I get those messages a lot, so I appreciate the feedback. But thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.